Tonight on the Daily Debrief.
You're killing me, man!
R. Kelly flips out while trying to defend himself on sex abuse accusations. Plus,
it's not about emotions, it's about evidence.
Closing arguments in the case of a Florida cop who shot and killed a stranded black motorist.
It does not matter if a person's a law enforcement officer or not. Justice is for everybody.
The nation's top criminal cases are on the Daily Debrief. It's Wednesday, March 6th. And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Debrief. I'm Aaron Keller. Vincent Hill is here. Mike Korobanics is here. Judge Ashley Wilcott will be joining us in a minute. A great panel, a great discussion. R&B singer R. Kelly is singing more blues than rhythm these days while claiming he's the victim of an orchestrated smear campaign. Prosecutors in Chicago charged Kelly with 10 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse late last month. This morning on CBS News, Kelly explosively and combatively denied the charges. He says his accusers are connecting on social media and orchestrating book deals and movies for themselves while trying to destroy his career.
How stupid would it be for me to, with my crazy past and what I've been through, right now I just think I need to be a monster and hold girls against their will, chain them up in my basement, and don't let them eat and don't let them out unless they need some shoes down the street from their uncle. Robert, stop it. Y'all quit playing. Quit playing. Robert. I didn't do this stuff. This is not me. Y'all, I'm fighting for my life. Y'all killing me with this. I gave y'all 30 years of my career.
Robert.
Career. Y'all trying to kill me? You're killing me, man. This is not about music. I'm trying to have a relationship with my kids, and I can't do it. Y'all just don't want to believe the truth. You don't want to believe it.
Kelly will be back in court March 22nd to answer the criminal charges we know about as of this hour. But breaking news right now in the life of R. Kelly, the singer has just been arrested again at a hearing involving child support. The specific charges of that new arrest remain unknown. Word of the arrest coming from the Associated Press. We will monitor the situation as it develops. And joining me tonight, our attorney Mike Korobanics, Judge Ashley Wilcott, and law enforcement expert Vincent Hill to talk a little bit about the R. Kelly situation. Vincent, let me start with you. He's been arrested again. Put us in the shoes of the officer who had to make that arrest.
Yeah, you know, I would love to have been in that patrol car, Aaron, to figure out if R. Kelly said anything on the way down there, because a lot of times, believe it or not, defendants will make statements in the police car. And a lot of times they don't realize it can be held against you if you just have this utterance of a statement. So I'd be curious to see if he said anything.
So a possibility of a mini impromptu interrogation there, and certainly officers are trained for that. Mike Korobanics, let me turn to you on this big question here. Does this interview where he's flipping out, jumping out of the chair, does that affect his legal liability? And if so, how?
This is going to be a very bad situation for the defense. I actually was writing down, because I was picturing the cross-examination, if R. Kelly ever takes a stand with this, the words, my crazy past and what I've been through. A prosecutor would love to spend the morning asking him, tell us what it is about your crazy past and what has he been through.
And he's also giving specific facts in there. Judge Ashley Wilcott, you're with us via Skype here. Unfortunately, you're not sitting across the table for this one. But look, he's sort of conjuring up, well, you know, I didn't do this, but he does talk about facts here. Could that be used against him?
Absolutely. I wish I was sitting across from the table from you, Aaron, because this is one that really gets me going. Absolutely, I think those facts can be used against him, but also look at his behaviors, his explosive personality. It means that I don't think he thinks what he's doing is wrong or upsetting or of concern, but the reality is that things he's done might amount to crimes.
You know, how does it come in, though? Does it come in under character evidence? You know, that gets tricky, because unless he tries to say he's a good guy, prosecutors can't throw it in against him.
Well, I think that they can use not just as character witness potentially, but also in terms of specific facts. And so if they're trying to prove these crimes and the defense wants to say that he shouldn't be guilty of these crimes because of his past or mitigating factors, perhaps only in the sentencing phase, I think that argument might be successful.
Interesting. Judge Ashley Wilcott, the panel will be back to you folks in a couple of minutes. A jury in Florida is still deliberating the fate of a police officer charged with attempted murder for shooting and killing a stranded African-American motorist. Newman Raja also faces a charge of manslaughter regarding the 2015 shooting death of Corey Jones. Jones's car broke down on an interstate exit ramp at 3 in the morning. Raja pulled up in front of him in an unmarked police van and approached him without wearing a uniform. Jones pulled a gun, so Raja shot him and claimed self-defense. Here are some of the prosecution's closing arguments.
In manslaughter, what we have to prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt is that this defendant, when he pulled up, from the time he pulled up, his behavior, his conduct was reckless. And that everything he did, he knew, or he reasonably should have known, that it would have led to the death of Corey Jones.
How do you go from, are you okay? Hey man, can I help you, which is what he claims he said, to get your, and pardon my language, I'm gonna say what he says, not how I normally speak. Get your fucking hands up. Not once, not twice, but three times. This is where the recklessness is. Like I told you, manslaughter is different. He pulls up, he's in an unmarked vehicle. He gets out of the van. He says, well, I got out of the van because I thought it was an abandoned vehicle, but when I pulled up, the door popped open. So then he stops his vehicle. He gets out of the van with nothing on, absolutely nothing, indicating that he's a police officer. Why don't you pull out your wallet badge? You've already done everything wrong from the jump.
The defense said this case had nothing to do with race and everything to do with Corey Jones pulling his gun first.
What happened on the off-ramp was not a crime. As terrible as it might sound, it was not illegal for Officer Raja to do what he did. He didn't leave home that night thinking, who can I kill? How can I commit murder? Who can I hurt tonight? He left home that night to go to work on the midnight shift with the thought in his mind of doing good as a police officer to serve and to protect. He didn't leave home that night trying to hurt anybody or to be involved in a horrible, horrible turn of events that began when Corey Jones pulled a gun and aimed it at Officer Raj's head. Let's be very clear about it, emotion aside. Corey Jones took out a gun and aimed it at Officer Raj's head, and everything changed. You couldn't take that back. There is nothing that could be done after that. That was an aggravated assault. That was the use of deadly force. You can't negotiate with a gun pointed at your head.
The defense also said Newman Raja was not trying to cause trouble that night. Here's the argument, which was met with a stern objection.
There's nothing to indicate that when he got out of the car, he was looking for trouble. This is not a guy that looks for trouble. There's no evidence that there is.
Sustained. Just rephrase.
He wasn't looking for trouble when he got out of the van. What was said? What was said is that he said, huh. Corey Jones said, huh, in response to what was said. And then you hear, I'm good. Yes, I'm good. And you immediately can tell that Officer Raja felt that there was something going on. Because remember, he's standing on the other side of the door. And the other side of the door, you can't see the person's hands. But something was in his hands, something was bothering him, And you know what? He was absolutely right. His instincts were absolutely right. There was a loaded gun in his hand. You can't tell whether the safety's on, whether the safety's off, whether it's loaded, but there was a gun in Corey Jones's hand. He got out of the car with a gun.
Raja wasn't looking for trouble? We'll get to that in a second. But first, the state's fiery rebuttal turned into a series of numbers.
125 feet. That's outrageous. 125 feet between where Mr. Jones's body ended up and where his firearm was. But that's not even the most important number of all the numbers that you heard. And I know you're writing them down. That's not the most important number that you heard during this entire trial. You know what the most important number is? 10. 10 seconds. 10 seconds. Not just for him to consider what he had done, to reflect, to have that evolution of intent from being just a reckless, overly aggressive individual to now intentionally shooting to kill a human being. 10 seconds for Corey to do something too. Even their expert, even their witness said they agree. Corey Jones, without a doubt, prior to shot number one, is at least 30 feet behind his own vehicle. How do you go up and treat a citizen at 3 o'clock in the morning with a broken down vehicle? How do you chase them behind their vehicle? That's what he did. He chased Corey Jones at minimum 30 feet behind his own vehicle before there's ever a shot fired.
Back again tonight, Judge Ashley Wilcott, attorney Mike Korobanek, law enforcement expert Vincent Hill. So, Mike, let me start with this one for you here. The prosecutor pushed this manslaughter theory, which is to say Newman Raja was reckless. They pushed that harder than the attempted murder charge.
Well, I think that's an easier thing to push because it really is it seems like this was a happenstance. It wasn't something premeditated. It seems it's something that just developed quickly. So I think that's probably where they're going to maintain their credibility.
Okay, then why even throw the other charge on the table?
Well, I think if it's in the case, you're obligated to prosecute it if you think you have some evidence. But I think as a trial wears on, you make decisions of which is your best pitch.
That makes sense. Vincent, great question for you coming up next here. The defense said Raja wasn't the type of guy looking for trouble. That sounded like they were getting into character evidence. Okay, and I wish they had done it during the trial because if the defense brings it up, the prosecution can rebut it. It's the law in Florida. I double-checked it. His record, failing to discontinue a pursuit, arrests for disorderly conduct, suspended from school because he was fighting, showing up at a domestic incident while he was off duty. He just rolls up in plain clothes to that one.
So, Aaron, he has a thing about being in plain clothes. He goes to this domestic, and I think he was looking for trouble. I think he saw Corey Jones in that vehicle before he circled around, which is why he actually circled around. Because if it was an abandoned vehicle, Aaron, he simply would have got on his radio, called it in, and kept going.
So this would have been great. It would have made a great trial if all of this could have come in. Judge Wilcott, though, I understand the rules of evidence here. Good objection at the tail end there. What did you make of it?
Oh, I absolutely think it was the right objection because, listen, they knew they couldn't bring in the character evidence because defense didn't mention it during the trial. But then defense tries to slip it in, whether it was intentional or not, during closing to say there's been no evidence he was up to anything wrong. So I think the prosecution had an obligation, duty to object, and I think they did it correctly.
The judge nipped in on it right on top of the prosecutor, too. Everybody was thinking the same thing. We'll be back to you folks again one more time at the close of the broadcast. Still ahead tonight here on The Debrief. We head back to the Newman Raja case, a look at the key evidence, including the sounds from the scene and the dueling medical experts. We're back inside the courtroom when we return. Opening statements are expected tomorrow in the case of an Iowa man accused of murdering his mother over money. Jason Carter is the defendant. Shirley Carter is the victim. Jason's father sued him in civil court after Shirley's death. A jury there ruled in the father's favor and awarded him $10 million from Jason. Prosecutors stepped in and filed criminal charges against Jason, citing evidence from the civil trial. Now back to the Newman Raja case. One critical piece of evidence is a police recording of the defendant just hours after the shooting. In it, he claimed he identified himself as a police officer when he confronted the victim.
As I got close to the vehicle, and the door swung open, and this guy jumps out, and I immediately got out of the van, and he's like, I'm okay, man. And at which point I said, hey man, police, can I help you? And second I said police, he jumped back, and I clearly remember him drawing and pointing a gun at me. I saw that silver muzzle, and he had, I can swear on this, he had a Laser Max laser in the guide rod in the gun, and I saw that red light of that Laser Max flashing at me, and I immediately just shouted, drop the gun, and sorry.
Take a deep breath. Let's do this, okay? Do you need a drink?
No.
Listen, I want you to take your time.
The state argued that Raja was lying because a roadside assist call, which captured most, if not all, of the altercation, suggests Raja never identified himself as an officer.
Stop. I'm good. Y'all good? Yeah.
Get your fucking hands up! Get your fucking hands up!
Oh my gosh. There's gunshots.
A defense audio expert, meanwhile, said he enhanced the roadside assistance call you just heard, and he believes there were additional words spoken. He just cannot make them out.
How do you know it's a voice?
Going through those three stages I mentioned earlier, we know the voice falls in a frequency area, that the voices are in, and I'm going to get a little geeky here, 350 to 700 frequency range, and those voices are, the voices that I've detected there are in that frequency range.
So it's because of the frequency range that you know it's a human voice instead of a dog barking or whatever.
That's one of the characteristics that is telling me that it's a voice. It's not, yeah, there are many, like you suggested, there are many sounds that could be in that frequency range as well. But this particular voice is definitely in that range. So that's one area.
Now, let me ask you this about the first enhanced version.
Yeah.
When you did that first enhanced version, were you able to conclude that it was a human voice?
Yes.
And how certain are you that it was a human voice?
100% certain.
Okay. So you're 100% sure by the time you get to the first enhanced version, and there's more to come, right? There's super enhanced.
Yeah, the next enhanced version will be the best way to present it today.
Okay, but I want to be clear. So you're 100% certain that there's a human voice spoken before the words, huh?
Yes.
He forced that same expert to admit he earlier testified he was only 50% sure. Competing experts have testified about whether victim Corey Jones could have kept running after he was shot in the chest. One bullet fired from the front struck Jones in the heart and caused massive damage. Another fired from the back struck Jones in the back of the arm. The defense wants jurors to believe Jones kept moving and still posed a threat during the second volley of gunshots, which were likely fired when Jones was running away. The state's expert says it's unlikely Jones could have stayed on his feet. The defense expert disagreed.
Could Mr. Jones have run the 40 or 50 yards in question subsequent to, afterwards, that he received the injury to his heart?
The short answer is yes, he could have.
How clear is the literature on that?
I think it's quite clear. I authored a 6-page letter that reviews the literature with regard to this very specific point. And anyone who's a hunter knows that if you shoot an animal, the animal takes off running and has a period of time before the animal will collapse. There are also numerous articles in the medical literature that talk of this very point of the unusual things that people are capable of doing, either by being shot or stabbed in their heart. So this is pretty much settled science. This is not something that's an aberration. It's well documented in the literature.
And has it been for a long time?
Yes, it has for the long time. I think the oldest article that I was able to find in the literature was from the 1800s.
Back to the panel one last time on this one. Let's jump in here. Mike Korobanics, you're in the role of the defense attorney here. So who does the jury believe when we've got a state expert and a defense expert and they disagree?
Well, I think this expert, the defense expert, I'll give him a point on this side because I didn't think the other experts were as strong as he was. He seemed to be relying on very solid ground with the text he used. DeMeo's book's one of the Bibles for lawyers to look at just to get educated. So
it's one thing to have the state's expert get up there and say, well, I believe this could have happened this way. It's another thing to have the state expert get up there and say, well, not only do I believe it, but I have this book, that book, and the literature goes back 100 and some years. Good point. So where does the jury come out on this? Vincent Hill, does the jury come out on this and say, well, he could have run, he could have posed a threat, or does the jury go back to the original premise that Newman Raja rolled up in an unmarked van, didn't presumably flash a badge, no uniform, and that Raja was the first aggressor?
Coulda, shoulda, woulda, Aaron. Here's the thing. Did Corey Jones know Newman Raja was a police officer? I say no. I think the jury's going to say no, because even the defense expert couldn't say what these words were on the beginning of that audio.
So you're putting a scratch to the defense expert, Judge Ashley Wilcott. Let's pretend that you're sitting in the role of the jury, or let's pretend it's a bench trial. How do you come down on this?
Well, I think it all depends on the credibility of those two experts. And when you have a jury, here's the thing. All those jury members may find that one expert was more credible than the other, and that may be the reason why they were still deliberating this afternoon. They're going to have to make that decision.
Well, hey, look, I mean, this probably isn't going to be a quick verdict. There's a lot for jurors to get through, and it's tough for jurors to say, yeah, we want to convict a cop.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you, Aaron. There's a lot to get through. Not only that, but I feel like the jury charges and the different crimes are complex. And it's not that juries aren't sophisticated. It's just going to take time to sort through all the evidence in conjunction with the jury charges to decide whether there's a conviction or not.
Judge Wilcott, I agree with you. There are many lesser included to go through here. And this is a complex factual situation. So great panel tonight. Great discussions. Thanks to all of you for being here. Also, an update to the breaking news we brought you off the top of the broadcast about the rearrest of R&B singer R. Kelly. Apparently, this arrest has to do with the child support hearing in which he was seated right before he was arrested. He apparently will not be released until he pays $100,000 in child support that he owes. We will keep on top of this case with updates tomorrow. And thanks for watching The Debrief tonight. That's all the time we have. I'll be back tomorrow at 5 o'clock right here. Live trial coverage begins at 9 in the morning with the new case out of Iowa. Good night.